All right, we are plugged in and ready to rock and roll. You're listening to the Crass Files podcast with Adam, and Alex Newman is plugging in with me today from the US to basically cover his work and look at the US elections drama, because a lot of people want to know what's going on, and so we have to cover it. So Alex is an award-winning international journalist with a global reputation for hard-hitting reporting, and he's the founder of Liberty Sentinel, which I've been on quite a bit lately. Alex is actually a real reporter, incredible, with integrity and backbone, and reporting on the truth. This kind of hard-hitting journalism we don't have too much in Australia, because we have an endless conga line of Rupert Murdoch News Corp idiots just lined up down the street who dare to call themselves columnists and reporters when they're anything but. They're really just prostitutes, so really disgusting what's happening in this country. And they've lied about the US election to us, the people, since day one, and they're still lying. They're just liars. It's unbelievable. So a lot of people are confused and want to know, and I think after hearing Alex's work, and I watched some videos of his, he is the man, because he's doing some fantastic work, and we'll be able to give some insights and more of a clear view today in the 40 minutes we have to go over this a little bit. Everything's up on my website, crassfiles.com, so check it out. Thanks to my members, can't do it without you, and contact me anytime through the website. Lots going up. Alex, great to have you on. Haven't chatted to you before. I don't know if you want to go through some bullet points of who you are and your work, and then continue on the new US elections and what is going on over there. It's like a massive soap opera. So how you going, buddy?
It is. It's totally crazy. Thank you so much for having me on, Adam. It's a pleasure to be with you. I appreciate the work that you're doing. And we actually have the same problem with the, I love how you put it, the endless conga line of Rupert Murdoch prostitutes. We've got that same problem in the United States. Yep. We have the fake media, which I think the overwhelming majority of Americans now realizes is not just dishonest, but is just outright fraudulent. It's not even legitimate media in any sense of the term. It's propaganda. It's deception. It is basically just straight up lies. But we also have the controlled opposition media, much of which is owned by Rupert Murdoch. We've got Fox News, we've got the Wall Street Journal, we've got the New York Post. I started calling it the New York Compost. You know, oftentimes they'll just straight up lie. They'll just say things that are overtly not true. And it's true. You'll find more truth on those controlled opposition media outlets than you will on, say, CNN or some of the other major broadcasters over here. Or, you know, the big newspapers too, the New York Slimes and the Washington Compost are just absolute garbage. But that's what makes the controlled opposition media so dangerous, because they have a little bit more truth, they have garnered trust from at least some segment of the conservative population of the United States. And Americans are generally conservative relative to peoples in other countries. And I think that's probably true in Australia. I think Americans are more conservative than average Australians, but I think generally people in Australia, the United States, New Zealand tend to be more conservative than people on, for example, mainland Europe. But it is incredible how much they have lied in this election. It defies belief. On the bright side, though, it's not working. And I'll give you a very specific example, since you brought up Rupert Murdoch and their propaganda operations. So Fox News has really been the main controlled opposition outlet in the United States. It was for years, in fact, over a decade, kind of the go-to news source for mainstream everyday conservatives in America. And so the people trying to steal the election, and I just put out a whole book on who these people are. It's called The Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. So I don't know how much time we'll have today to talk about it, if we can get into it a little bit. But there is really a subversive network in the United States. It's bipartisan, right? We have the two big parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. At the highest levels, they're both corrupted. They're both part of this agenda. And they have a network of organizations. And I'm sure the same is true in Australia. And one of the key organizations in this network, it's called the Council on Foreign Relations. To give you some idea of its power, Hillary Clinton, while she was Secretary of State, that's our equivalent of foreign minister, said in a speech to the Council on Foreign Relations that they are the ones who tell her what she should be doing and how she should be thinking about the future. And this is available on YouTube. Anybody can see it. Joe Biden, he was on stage with the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass. And Richard Haass introduced himself. He says, "Hi, I'm Richard. I work here at the Council on Foreign Relations." And Joe Biden chimes in. He says, "Hi, I'm Joe Biden, and I work for Richard." As if that was really funny. But it's not just Democrats. It's Republicans who are also deeply, deeply involved with this. Our former Vice President Dick Cheney, who was vice president under George W. Bush, our president before Barack Obama, he was actually a board member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And I've got a video of him bragging how, you know, he loves being part of it. But of course, he would never tell the voters when he was running for re-election. And then he laughs maniacally. So just to give you some sense of the power of this organization. Well, Rupert Murdoch was for a long time a member of this organization. His son, James Murdoch, who's taking over much of the media empire that his father built, is a current member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And News Corporation itself, the company that owns Fox and Wall Street Journal and the New York Post, was a corporate member of the Council on Foreign Relations for many years, along with the parent company of CNN, along with the parent companies of many of the large fake media outlets in America. So they're all part of the same club. And during the election, they knew that all the fake media outlets in the world combined wouldn't be able to convince the American people that Joe Biden had won the election. Because, as I mentioned, your average American, especially Republicans, they know that the media lies. I mean, when the media says that the sun is coming up in the morning, they'd have to go out to the window and make sure that was actually true, because nobody believes anything that they say. Some Democrats do, but Republicans don't. So they knew if they were going to pull off this steal, Adam, they had to use Fox News as their secret weapon, as their trump card, so to speak. Well, they tried. Fox News was the first one to call several of the key states for Joe Biden long before even the fraudulent election results indicated that that was a sensible thing to do. So they called Arizona, which is a Republican state. They called Arizona before any of the other networks for Joe Biden. They also called Virginia for Joe Biden, and they called some of the other ones for Joe Biden. Meanwhile, they refused to call some of the key states that went for Trump until the very last moment, right? Way after it became obvious that Trump had won in my state of Florida, which is one of the top three states, way after it became obvious that Trump had won in Texas, they were continuing to refuse to call those states for Trump, so that it looked like Biden had all this momentum, Biden was winning, when in reality, in the states that had honest elections, he was being absolutely destroyed. I mean, clobbered like nothing we've ever seen before. So they trotted out Fox News, and they had Fox News try to sell this lie that Joe Biden had won in this rigged election. Well, it blew up in their faces, and millions of people, and I mean millions of people, have left Fox News, and they're never going back. Fox News' ratings are now in the tank completely. They're actually doing worse than CNN, which nobody thought possible. CNN, it's been kind of a running joke for years in America. Literally, we have a show here that's kind of crazy called Ancient Aliens, and Ancient Aliens does better than CNN even at prime time. It's a true story, and so it was always kind of a joke, and yet now Fox News is doing worse than CNN. They have become the laughingstock now. Their ratings are in the toilet. They're doing worse than Newsmax, which was, before this whole fiasco, a much, much smaller kind of a cable TV network that operates on primarily news. So this is really, I think, encouraging news, Adam. The American people were not fooled by this fraud. They are still not fooled by this fraud. If you look at the polling data, well over 90% of Republicans know that this election was stolen, and at least a third of Democrats do. And my guess is these are probably the same polls that told us Hillary Clinton was going to win in a landslide. And so my guess is a much larger majority of the American people knows that this election was rigged.
Yeah, you cover some good points there, and I have to agree with what you're saying. And I think it's the same in Australia. I think we can see with the Australian media. Well, you know, the Australian people, our country, and the United States are very heavily aligned and interconnected there, and there's a lot of respect, and we follow it very much. And I think that in Australia we have that, because we have that same mindset through the media with Murdoch. I mean, he owns 70% of our printed press and online digital press, you know. You know, which is News Corp in Australia. So it's a whole handful of these dominating papers, and he really shapes the minds of the public for a long time. He shapes elections. He shapes the culture, really. I mean, through these newspapers, because it's always been so dominant, such a such a huge presence, you know. I mean, he has such a big reach, but I think finally, and I think with the elections as well, and what you're explaining there with Fox and everything, I think this is a sinking ship, and the rats are starting to jump off, you know. And I think the people here now as well, they're starting to see what's really going on here, and these newspapers and outlets are running out of ideas, and they're going over the same old trash over and over, and it's becoming pathetic, you know. And we're seeing that. So a really amazing situation in the US, because I was interested in it, and I think you've covered the best bullet points there. I mean, I watched it from day one. I watched the feeds here. They were crossing from Australia studio to the US. They were covering it. I watched it from after midday here. It was I was just pottering around, and you could see the Biden votes coming in early. There was a bit of a jump there, but as the day wore on here, even the reporters here were saying this is going to be a landslide. They were admitting it. I heard it. They were saying this is kind of getting overwhelming. And then, of course, Alex, when everyone went to sleep, it all changed. Everything, it was like one big magic show. And then from then on, I keep saying it was like the whole planet just sitting there watching a bank heist, you know, like a bank robbery in real time, and they just didn't care. And it's been like that, and it's really terrible and disgusting. It's such a bad thing for people to have to witness. And it's, as I said, it's still continuing now. That's really interesting. You mentioned Fox News, because everyone was sort of believing that that was the only, true news outlet that was supporting Trump himself. And then suddenly, right at the final hour, they turned around and stabbed him in the back, and the American people in the back, or the Patriots, and completely changed course. It was really a bizarre thing to see. It's like incredible. So it's amazing that you mention Rupert Murdoch's Fox News, that they did that. Well, a lot of power, I guess, and it's not worked, according to you, which is that's good to hear anyway. I'll take that.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal news. And in fact, I've been warning about Fox News for many, many years. When I discovered that Rupert Murdoch was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, when I discovered that News Corporation was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, it was very obvious what was going on. And in fact, we know a little bit about Rupert Murdoch's political leanings when it comes to the United States. He was supporting Hillary Clinton. He was supporting Michael Bloomberg, who is a radical left-wing totalitarian. He is absolutely obsessed with disarming us. I've run into him several times at these UN conferences. He's absolutely obsessed with shutting down our economy under the guise of saving us from CO2. Meanwhile, of course, he owns, I don't know how many private jets and multiple yachts and 50-something cars and multiple mansions all over the world, and he wants to lecture me about my carbon footprint. It's disgusting, and this is the guy that Rupert Murdoch got behind. But you're right about what happened. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you guys in Australia noticed that as well, because we saw it here too. When we went to sleep here on the East Coast, it was so obvious Trump was winning. I mean, he was winning in all the key states. There almost was no path left for Biden to win anymore when I went to bed that night. And then I woke up in the morning and come to find out, oh my goodness, they found hundreds of thousands of votes, and they all went to Biden in all of the key states that Biden needed to win if he was going to win the election. And so right away, it was very obvious that we were being deceived, that this was a fraud. And I think your average normal American recognized that, especially your average Trump supporter. And so all the Fox Newses in the world wouldn't be able to convince us that what we saw with our own eyes was untrue. And during the days that follow, the massive evidence proving the fraud, the mechanics of the fraud, how it went down, started emerging. And we have now seen that. The media continue. They really remind me of Baghdad Bob. And you guys might not remember Baghdad Bob, but during the invasion of the United States invasion of Iraq, and I wasn't a fan of that, but there was a comical story. This chief propagandist for Saddam Hussein, a gentleman by the name of, I forget his name, but we called him Baghdad Bob. And so he would go on and he'd do his broadcast and he'd say, "We are defeating the Americans," and blah, blah, blah. And as it was getting closer to the end, you could see, you know, American tanks in the back. You'd see bombs dropping on buildings. And he'd sit there and talk about how the Iraqi forces were defeating the Americans. And it kind of got to be like a running joke. Baghdad Bob is telling us that the Iraqis are winning as the troops are closing in behind him. And that's really what the media seems like today. They say to your face, there's no evidence of election fraud. The evidence is absolutely everywhere. We saw it during one of the press conferences. Trump's legal team held a press conference that I wrote about. And Rudy Giuliani, who's one of Trump's attorneys, sat there for almost 2 hours and went through the evidence. He literally read from the sworn affidavits. So in our courts, one of the highest forms, one of the most credible forms of evidence is sworn eyewitness testimony, where people swear under penalty of perjury. They can be prosecuted if they're lying. They, you know, they take an oath. So help me God, I'm telling the truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. And they swore that they had seen all sorts of things, Biden ballots being scanned over and over again in the machines, Trump ballots being thrown out, manipulation through the counting machines, fake ballots being delivered at 2-3 in the morning when all the Republican observers had gone home. I mean, just an endless, I mean, there's hundreds, maybe thousands of these affidavits now with sworn eyewitness testimony. And Trump's legal team sat there and read some of these statements. And the fake media, the ones that did actually mention this historic press conference, they came back and they said, well, that was a nice press conference, but there was no evidence of voting fraud. Like, wait a minute. I watched the press conference. It was 2 hours of evidence of voting fraud. You could say I didn't like the evidence. I didn't think the evidence was credible. I think the evidence will be discredited in court. But you can't say there was no evidence. They sat there and read the evidence for 2 hours. So that's how pathetic they've gotten. They've come to the point now where they just blatantly, overtly lie to your face. And they just think we're too stupid to go look for ourselves.
Mm. Yeah, it's insane. I've seen that since day one. The media, how they've painted this, and so we started noticing as well that the media was starting to use images of Donald Trump from the back, you know, kind of with his head down. You know, it was like this defeated sort of thing. It was an amazing thing to witness, you know, from the day one here. But what's happening? What's happening over there, like with all these cases in and law cases? Because the media just keep telling us that it's all being chucked out and ignored, and nothing's happening. And so that's what's really confusing people at the moment. Because I can't get any really decent news. It's very, very hard. I go on to like some of the big alternative media channels, and they're saying that it's looking quite positive. And then you see the mainstream media, and it's like he's finished. He's gone. It's all over. And so I am meeting people around there, like, what is really happening over there with President Trump? Is it really over? Because it seems like now they've accepted that Biden is the president-elect. And as everyone keeps saying, you've said so much, when this started happening, the media called the election, which is a phenomenal thing to see in human history. It really is. The mainstream media, basically, you know, mostly from the US, calling an election when it wasn't over yet. And as you said, that's amazing to see. You see these Trump teams up there going on for hours, and Trump himself, I've watched his White House speeches where it was just a phenomenal thing to see a US president up there in front of the world talking about this level of corruption and this and how deep this runs. I was just shaking my head, and then the media just discounted immediately, and that he's crazy. It's really a phenomenal thing. What's the best bullet points you could give us and our listeners now of all this court battle stuff? Where is this? Explain it a little bit, what's happened there and where it's going.
Yeah, things change by the minute right now. And so it's difficult to get a handle on what's going on, but I can do my best to sort through the facts and the fiction as to what's happening right now. Many of the court cases have been thrown out. And I think some of these were very disappointing to have them thrown out, including the case that the Supreme Court threw out, where the state of Texas and 21 other states, including my state of Florida, that's almost half of our states, and something like, I think, 116 members of Congress, a very significant, I think that's more than one fourth of the entire U.S. House of Representatives, which most closely represents the people of the United States, filed a lawsuit against these states because they held corrupt elections. And that really should have been a case that the Supreme Court took up. But I will say there's a caveat, too. We don't want the courts deciding our elections. In fact, if you go through our U.S. Constitution, there really is no role for the courts in determining our elections. The state legislature is in charge of determining who the electors will be, who go to the Electoral College. And that is really where the decision should be made. Now, almost all states have said that in their state laws, the state legislatures have delegated the authority to choose the electors to the popular vote in that state. There's a few that haven't. But those states can take back that power at any time. And when the states created the federal government, when they wrote the Constitution and ratified it and agreed to surrender certain powers that they had to their agent, the federal government, they established very clearly how presidents were to be selected. State legislatures were to appoint electors, and they could choose however they wanted to do that. There was no prescription for how the state legislatures were in charge of doing that. They just were in charge. And then these electors would meet and they would vote. And the person that they selected would become the president of the United States. And that is, I think, a very good system. And there's no role for the courts in that process. However, we had very, very strange things going on here. Again, the evidence of fraud is absolutely overwhelming. And so I think the courts should have at least taken up some of these cases, looked at the evidence and said, hey, guys, the state legislature needs to do something because this evidence here is very persuasive that the vote was stolen. We can't have fraud deciding who is going to be the president of the United States. So right now we're in a very unique situation. This is unprecedented in American history. We have five, maybe six states that have sent two slates of electors to the Electoral College. Now the question is, who is Congress going to accept? And as of right now, there are unfortunately some very powerful Republicans, including the Senate majority leader. The Senate is controlled by Republicans. The House is controlled by Democrats. And unfortunately, the Senate majority leader, Mitch McConnell, whose wife is Chinese, whose family has very, very deep ties to the Communist Party of China going back decades, is now pressuring Republican members of the Senate not to challenge this fraud and not to accept the Republican electors, but to accept the Democrat electors. So this is very problematic. Now, Congress does have the power to make this right. And in the House of Representatives, we already have one congressman. All it takes is one member of the House and one member of the Senate to demand some scrutiny here. And the House and the Senate will have to take up all of these shenanigans and take this all into consideration before deciding to count the electoral votes. So we've got five, maybe six states that have competing slates of electors. They had a Democrat slate and a Republican slate, and both met and both cast their vote for their candidate. So now Congress needs to certify these things on January 6th. So that is coming soon. There are still some cases working their way through the courts. There's also been some incredible things released. I'll give you an example. A court in Michigan released a report that was commissioned for a court case up there on the fraud that was perpetrated through the election machines, through the Dominion voting systems that were counting the ballots. And what this report found by a very prestigious cybersecurity group was that these machines had a 68% error rate. Okay, that means 68% of the time they were screwing it up. That is completely unconscionable. And in one of these counties where these machines were used up in Michigan, the election machines actually flipped the vote and they gave the vote to Biden when it should have been for Trump. And it was enough to actually have that county called for Biden until they went back through and actually manually recounted the ballots and said, oh, wait a minute here. These machines gave 6,000 Trump votes to Biden. And that's the only reason why Biden won. We've got to undo that. And so then that county officially went for Trump. Well, this report that the judge just ordered released shows that these machines had a 68% error rate. So how can Congress possibly accept the Democrat electors when we have evidence like this showing that the vote was rigged? And that's going to be the question. So there's a lot of pressure right now being placed on the U.S. Senate to take this up. And there's a lot of pressure by Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, on Republicans to fall in line and accept Joe Biden as president-elect and eventually as president on January 20th. However, Trump is a very smart man, and he obviously knew this was coming. In fact, he's been warning about election fraud going all the way back to the election of Obama and Mitt Romney in 2012. He said that the election machines were responsible for Obama's victory over Mitt Romney. He said this publicly on Twitter. So he's had many years to think about this, many years to prepare for it. In 2018, he actually signed an executive order on foreign interference in our elections that gives broad powers for the executive branch of the federal government to intervene when there are threats from foreign powers to our national elections, very much including communist China. Now, there are multiple pieces of evidence, including affidavits filed that suggest that communist China played a crucial role in rigging this election. Also Venezuela, also potentially even Iran and some other governments. So this is a serious issue. It's not over yet. We were expecting a report tomorrow from the Director of National Intelligence on foreign interference in this election. I found out today from media reports that it looks like that report is going to be delayed. There's still some controversy over what is going to go in and what is not going to go in. The deep state swamp creatures in the intelligence bureaucracy want to make it seem like everything is fine, even though the evidence suggests that that is not the case. And so there are some also really extreme And I don't necessarily mean extreme in a pejorative way, but some really extreme scenarios that have been laid out by some of Trump's close allies and some very high-level military people. These are not being very broadly reported in the establishment media here in the United States, and I'm sure the same is true in Australia. But I'll give you some examples. We actually just put out an issue of the New American Magazine on the election fraud, and for this issue, we interviewed General McInerney. He's retired now, but he was our third highest official in our Air Force. He's a 3-star general, and for years, he was one of the top officials in the U.S. Air Force. Another senior general, General Paul Vallely, who's also retired now, has come out and now said the same thing. And General Mike Flynn, who used to be the head of military intelligence and then went on to serve as Trump's national security advisor until the deep state took him out by threatening his son and framing him and getting him to admit to a crime he didn't commit to protect his son from a fraudulent prosecution. That's a whole nother story there. But all three of these men have now said that President Trump needs to invoke the Insurrection Act. So we have a statute that's been on the books since the early 1800s. This is a federal law that allows the president to use the military. He's allowed to federalize part of the state militaries as necessary to enforce key federal laws when there's no other normal way to enforce them in the ordinary course of events. And it's been rarely used. It's only been used 22 times in our history, typically when things really get out of control. For example, when we have riots that overwhelm state and local officials, it's a very rare thing. But it would allow, if Trump were to invoke it, to the military to go in and seize some of this evidence. Now, there's been some misinformation out there that this would be martial law, that this would be suspending the Constitution, that Trump would go and arrest all the vote fraud criminals. And I don't think it's anything nearly that dramatic. But what these generals and senior military people are proposing is that Trump invoke this Insurrection Act if all other options fail and have the military go secure all this evidence and make it available to the American people so that everybody can see what happened here. That would be a very dramatic step, but it's not off the table. As I mentioned, some of Trump's top people have proposed this. And there are a lot of people in the administration who believe that's a good idea. I had dinner about 2 weeks ago now with one of Trump's liaisons to a key federal agency. And he said, despite all this craziness, people in the White House are absolutely confident that Trump will serve a second term. And if you listen to some of his top people, they're saying this publicly. Our Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, said publicly that he expects a very smooth transition to a second Trump administration, to a second term for the Trump administration. General Flynn, just this weekend, actually, was speaking at a rally in Washington, D.C. for President Trump. And he said a lot of people ask him how sure he is that Trump will serve a second term. He said on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say 10. So there's still a lot of optimism among people close to Trump. Naturally, they wouldn't be sharing all the details of what might be coming. But I think it's very premature to say that Biden has won the election. It's very premature to say that the fraud has been successful. And there are tens of millions of Americans who will not tolerate a fraudulent election and a president who was elected using fraud. So it's going to be a very interesting time. I think we're really in an unprecedented crisis in this country. I don't think we've ever had anything quite like this before. It's also, I think, one of the most dangerous times in our history. I mean, there's been a few times when we had quite serious risks. You know, the British invaded in 1812. We had a civil war, of course, that killed hundreds of thousands of Americans. But we are standing right at the edge of the abyss. If they succeed in stealing this election, we may never have another free and fair election in this country. That's how high the stakes are. We have now top people in many of our states openly talking about secession. The head of the Republican Party in the state of Texas said, look, if we're going to have fraudulent national elections now where Democrat states are going to just rig the vote and choose a scandal-plagued subversive to be president using election fraud, we're not going to participate anymore. We're going to consider seceding. And Texas was its own country at one time. It could certainly become its own country again. So that's just to kind of give you an overview of some of the things that are happening in this country, Adam, that are not being widely reported, but that are incredibly significant and that people ought to know about if they want to be well informed.
Yeah. Just to wind back a little bit there. Just a couple of questions for you. You mentioned this Council on Foreign Relations. So this is a deep one, isn't it? I'm wondering how deep it actually goes. One interesting thing that popped up maybe a few weeks ago, whatever it was, is this Defense Secretary Mark Esper. I read, maybe you can clarify it, that he was a Council on Foreign Relations member, and he was indeed fired by Donald Trump. So this is a big one that came out in the news, and he's a defense secretary. So that's pretty deep stuff. And just the second part of that question, I'm reading some articles. I put one up on my website last night about this. This Insurrection Act, that he could invoke this, just to get your opinion on, like, just the mechanics behind that. What would Americans see if he did invoke that law? What would they be seeing around them on the streets, or would it be much quieter? Because looking at this myself, I'm just stunned, and a lot of people are confused, and it's quite scary, to be honest, at the power play going on in your country, in the United States, within the government. This is a rotten, terrible, really terrifying corruption at the deepest level, but there seems to be so much power. I look at Biden, I think he just seems like this puppet up there being wheeled along, you know, and there's this... there's this sneaky, you know, sort of power play going on underneath. And you have a, you know, the United States has serious laws, and it's the people are just baffled at how they're able to get away with this. But on those two fronts, ESPA, this is a pretty bit deep sort of thing, because he's a military guy in there and was sacked by Trump, and there's been a string of them. And just on that Insurrection Act, what Americans would see if that was, if that does go live. Well, what does this mean for people over there?
Yeah, excellent questions, Adam. And there's a lot that has not been discussed very publicly about these things. I know some, and I'm happy to share some. I have been advocating that Mark Esper be fired since he was nominated for
the
position.
I heard your interview, actually. You said that before he was, right?
Yes, actually, just a few days before. And
I don't know who that was. Yeah, that was a classic.
Thank you. Yeah, that was an interview with Greg Hunter, and I got some phone calls actually suggesting that interview might have been the reason he was fired. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I've been advocating for months that Mark Esper be fired. First of all, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, unless you're a double agent, you have no business in our government. We know what the Council on Foreign Relations is about. Their goal is to sell our sovereignty down the river and to merge us into this global system. And if we were merged into this global system that they are trying to create, by definition, we would have to give up our constitution, our individual freedoms, our Declaration of Independence. You know, America is a very unique nation. We're founded on what our founding father said was the self-evident truth that God created us equally and that God gave each of us unalienable rights. These are rights that don't come from government. These are rights that cannot be taken away by government because government didn't give them. And they got this from the Bible. You know, God said, thou shalt not murder. And so the founding fathers said, hey, God gave you a right to your life and nobody can take that away, including the government. God said, thou shalt not steal. Therefore, you have a right to property and nobody can take away your property, even the government. These rights supersede government. So it's a very unique nation, unlike any other in human history. And it's a major threat to this agenda that the globalists call the New World Order. I mean, the two systems are fundamentally incompatible at the deepest level. You cannot have both coexisting at the same time. So the objective of the Council on Foreign Relations is and always has been to undermine the American system of government and to sell our sovereignty to this global project that they've had in the works for generations now. So the fact that Mark Esper is a member of the CFR tells me all that I need to know. And that's not to say every member of the CFR is some secret conspirator trying to destroy America and build a new world order. Many of them don't know better. A lot of them think it's just, you know, I'm going to boost my career and it's very prestigious. Okay, whatever. But it's a very significant warning sign. And then when Mark Esper came out, you know, I don't know if you guys saw in Australia, you probably did, but Seattle was on fire. You had these terrorists who had taken over a big part of the city, and the local authorities let it happen. The state authorities let it happen. And you know what? As I mentioned earlier, in America, the assumption that our nation is based on is that God gave each of us rights. And the obligation, actually, if you keep reading down in that document, our Declaration of Independence, they said governments are established among men to protect these rights. And so when you have people in Seattle who are being terrorized, who are being murdered, whose businesses are being torched by terrorists, these people all have a right to life, liberty, property, etc. And if the state and the local authorities won't uphold those rights, then it becomes the obligation of the federal government to come in and say, hey, these are American citizens. God gave them a right to their life and their property as well. And so if you won't solve this problem, if you won't put the terrorists in jail, if you won't shut down this anarchy, then the U.S. government's going to have to do it. And Mark Esper came out and said, no, I don't think we should do that. I don't think we should invoke the Insurrection Act. So right off the bat, that was perilously close to insubordination. Trump should have fired him right there on the spot. He didn't. But now he has been fired. That's very good news. The new man in charge of the Department of Defense, from what I understand, is a very decent, honorable American. He's loyal to the president and to his oath of office, which, of course, is to the Constitution of the United States. And that's crucial. And there is a battle going on right now. It's happening under the surface. Not very many people in America even know that it's happening. But there is a battle right now between the Central Intelligence Agency and the American people and the military. This goes back a very long time. In fact, back during John F. Kennedy's time, John F. Kennedy passed an executive policy basically neutralizing the Central Intelligence Agency. He basically made them desk jockeys, right? You can push papers around, but no more of this funny stuff, you know, sneaky spy stuff and overthrowing government. You know, no more of that. You guys sit at your desks and you can analyze information and that's it. So Trump actually invoked that and has really neutralized the Central Intelligence Agency. He grounded their Air Force. He stopped their special operations. And when it comes to the military, he now put all special operations directly under the command of the Secretary of Defense. So it doesn't go through the deep state swamp bureaucracy at the Pentagon anymore. These are very important developments. You also have kind of a contest going on between military intelligence. I mentioned General Flynn earlier. He was Trump's first national security advisor until the deep state took him out. And Flynn brought in a lot of wonderful people, by the way, into the National Security Council. And the deep state has been trying to remove them since they removed Mike Flynn. And they haven't been able to because Trump has intervened to protect some of these guys. So there are very good people still in the DOD and at the National Security Council who know a whole lot. And I'll just leave it at that. We can say there are significant things happening. Esper has been removed. Good people have been put in place. What exactly that means, I don't know. But, you know, I think we can put two and two together and figure out that at least potential plans are in place in case things get really wild. And that's good. I think that's important. Now, your second question, what does it mean if the Insurrection Act gets invoked? Well, it's happened, like I said, 22 times before in American history. It could range from extreme to relatively mild. But there's a very good column in the Epoch Times, a phenomenal newspaper that I contribute to as well. It is published in, I think, 22 countries. You guys may have an edition in Australia explaining what this means. It's by an attorney, Stephen Meister. And he goes through the statute itself. And one of the things that the statute requires is that the federal laws, and of course they have to be constitutional federal laws, the federal government has very, very limited authority to act in the domestic sphere. But it does have some authority. There are certain federal authorities. There are certain federal laws that are constitutional and must be enforced. And some of those pertain to federal elections, right? States typically handle most election things, states and counties. But there are some federal components of federal elections, and those laws need to be enforced. Well, right now, obviously, they're not being enforced. We've tried to get justice in the court, and that has failed. And so what these three prominent generals and many, many others as well have proposed is that Trump invoke the Insurrection Act to try to make sure that these election laws are enforced to try to capture the evidence before the fraudsters can destroy it. And so what would it look like? Well, I know there's a tendency to think, oh, Insurrection Act, does that mean we're going to have troops on the street and concentration camps and overthrow the Constitution? Nothing of the sort, right? The Insurrection Act does not supersede the Constitution. I think it's very improbable that we would see troops on our streets. It's very improbable that we would have martial law. However, it is possible under this act for military police to go in and seize, for example, some of these Dominion voting machines that were used to rig the election. And then for the military to go through these, have their cybersecurity experts and their intelligence people go through and figure out exactly what happened and then make that evidence available to the American people. So that is a possibility. I'm not saying that's coming, but I think it's a possibility. I think Trump would prefer not to go that route if there are other alternatives. But there are some very influential people, people that he listens to, people who've been in the highest echelons of our military. Secretary who have suggested that this may be a good course of action if justice can't be obtained in other ways. So I'll leave it at this. I'll say the election is far from over. A lot can happen between now and January 6th when Congress meets to consider the votes from the Electoral College. Are they going to disqualify some of the delegates, all of the delegates? If neither candidate gets the required 270 electors, then the election would actually go to Congress. And Congress would then end up determining who is going to be the president. And that would be based on one vote per state. Most states are Republican. Most delegations are Republican. And so that would be another path to victory for Trump should it come to that. However, time is running short. And if Trump is going to overturn this fraud and stop it and expose it, he's going to need to act pretty quickly. So I hope the people of Australia will stand with us. I hope you guys will keep us in your prayers. This is an incredible and very, very dangerous time for America. And I'll leave you with this warning. If America goes down, if freedom goes down in America, you guys in Australia, people in other parts of the world won't stand a chance. So I hope you'll stand with us. I hope you'll pray with us. It's a very, very dangerous time. But we should not give up hope. So,
that's right. Yeah, we'll plug out now. You're right. Yeah, they're just waiting here in Australia to get their fangs into this, I tell you. It really is so important. And the China threat as well for all of us and the US. So there's always so much to cover. Hopefully we can plug in again in the new year when you've got some time to just catch up again and continue here because you're doing a lot of great work. And I'll put all your links up as well. I don't know if there's any books that you, any book websites or anything that you have. You can link them to me. I can email you and you can just send me any links back that you want me to put into the podcast description for folks. Really good. Is that all? Anything else you want to leave on today?
Yeah, I just really appreciate you having me on, Adam. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for keeping the people of Australia informed. Really appreciate it. I'd be honored to come back on next year. So let's keep in touch. And yeah, if you shoot me an email, I'll be happy to send you whatever you need for the show notes or anything like that. I'll send it right over. So.
Thanks, buddy. Great to speak with you, Alex Newman. Please take care and keep doing your great real research and reporting. This is what we need on this planet, real reporting. And I really think I'm feeling positive about this. So let's see where this goes and chat again soon. Please take care, buddy.
Hey, thank you so much, Adam. You do the same. Appreciate it.
Okay. See you, mate.
Bye-bye.